DCIP reported, one of the troops placed his hand on Amr's wound and shouted, "Die! Die!" Amr was eventually transferred to the hospital, where it was determined that the bullet fractured the cervical vertebrae in his neck, leading to spinal cord and paralysis of all four of the child's limbs.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and youth, guided by the wisdom of the Holy Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed some light on this important subject. Salamu alaikum. Welcome, dear Sister Salma.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
Thank you so much for joining us. So in our previous episode, we were discussing about one of the questions. I'll just repeat it for the listeners. That a parent asks, please can you guide me as to what I should expect from my child when he becomes a teenager and the goals I should have in mind for him so as to ensure proper training from now before it becomes too late. And you mentioned about how it's very important to instill truthfulness and how to, you know, deal with the youth and the child when they grow up, because they become more independent and it's hard for them not to lie based on different situations. But you gave some nice tips on how to, you know, react to those situations, like try and give them outcomes, try and keep them in your confidence, but you should also show some consequences. So would you like to add on to this?
Yes, I would like to add on the other characteristic that or virtue that the parent needs to work on so as to ensure a healthy, pious child or teenager. Okay, and that's trustworthiness. These two characteristics really go together hand in hand, truthfulness and trustworthiness.
Yeah.
The Holy Prophet was also, before he was given the message, he was Sadiq and Amin. And this is why people really took his word, because he was so trustworthy. He had, you know, like people's amanat in his, you know, properties, and he used to return back on time, and he used to really look after them, and they trusted him so much. Even the mushrikeen trusted him so much.
True.
So trustworthiness is something very vital for piety, for a healthy mind of a child, and for retaining his purity also. In fact, all transactions in the society, if you go and see, and you know, they revolve around this character trait, that is trustworthiness. If I couldn't trust you, maybe we wouldn't be talking together, you know.
Yeah.
Or if I, for example, if I go to a shop, if I couldn't trust that man, I wouldn't buy his products. But
true.
I buy his products because I know that, you know, like, he's trustworthy. It's just something that is so, like, important to instill this characteristic, that is trustworthiness. So of course, it's not inborn in a child, but the child, because he's truthful, it can lead to trustworthiness very easily. For example, giving responsibilities and then seeing if they lived up to those responsibilities brings up that trustworthiness, you know, that feeling that, okay, I told you to do this, did you do it? I trusted you to do it, you know,
yeah,
a responsibility.
True.
And if you see that they're speaking the truth, then they will also fulfill the trust. So trustworthiness is very important with friends. For example, if you go and see a person who doesn't have this character of trustworthiness, he won't have a friend. The friend won't trust him. Like if they want to meet at a time, or they want to do something together, or they want to study together, if one breaks the trust, then they won't have a friend in the long run. So trustworthiness with your friends, with your parents, with any interaction that you have is very, very important for his future only, and his growth, and to attain success in this life, and of course in the hereafter. But of course it starts with this life. In this life we need, you know, like to have this trustworthiness within us and within the child, to raise him to be a manadar in whatever, you know, aspect it is.
Very true, very true. So we're just going to pause briefly and we'll resume in a moment.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. We're back on IRIB English Radio, and we've been discussing about the how to deal with teenagers. And you said that it's important to cultivate some certain characteristics for when they're younger. And you started off with the truthfulness, and then you came to trustworthiness. And you said that it's a very important characteristic, and you have to try and give them responsibility, see how they deal with them, you know, and how it's important to be responsible with friends, parents, and interactions of all sorts, so as to be able to grow healthily and succeed in life.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, I just want to add before I go on to my other point about how to bring up teenagers in that way that you want them to lead a successful, pious Islamic life. Before that, I'd point out that in all aspects of trustworthiness, very important. For example, keeping secrets also.
Yeah.
From a young age, to entertain that is very important.
True.
Like for example, in game form, you can teach that this is our secret. This is just between us. Like in a very laughing way. Not that don't tell anybody. This is very bad. If you tell everybody that I won't tell you this, I won't do this. No, it should be like a playing thing, you know, first.
Yeah.
That this is our secret only. And then to keep on reminding our secret, you know. So he will know that these words should be kept and not be told. Slowly, slowly, when he grows up and he, you know, he will understand that certain things don't need to be told.
Yeah.
What things that go on at home are our personal secrets. They don't need to be told outside the home.
Very true.
So these things should be inculcated in such a way that the teenager feels like his actions are so mature that he doesn't reveal everything to everybody. And you know, like even to his friends, certain things are so personal that he shouldn't reveal to his friends or his close ones also.
Very true.
Except between the home, the parents. What he does, even his own secrets sometimes, you know, his own personal things. Like, for example, sometimes, you know, you snore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have to say these things that I snore or things like that. These are some things that are so personal that you don't want anybody to find out your weakness.
True.
A teenager who is trustworthy wouldn't want his weaknesses to be felt by others. He will be so secretive inside him also that he wouldn't want to let out some things that will show his weakness.
But at times, you know, it's how to kind of keep that idea that you should have secrets with, you know, everybody, be careful, but then not to keep too many secrets from your parents, for example.
Yeah,
sometimes
that's right.
That happens.
Absolutely. So you see, it's the way the relationship between the parents and the child should be so warm. that from a young age the child should, you know, like look
want
forward,
to
yeah, want to talk to the parent yeah. only. And the parents should remind them and guide them that this is like just between us in our home only. This is whatever goes around at home, we shouldn't tell it to the people. People
yeah.
sometimes take wrong advantage, they think wrongly. Everybody has different kind of thoughts. We don't want them to misunderstand us.
Yeah.
So this is just between us only. You don't have to let out about how your father comes late at home. You know,
true.
All these things, as they grow up, they start understanding.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, it comes slowly by slowly and gradually, but it is something that you have to give them a responsibility and to see that this trustworthiness is enhanced or not.
Yeah. And just to add on that, sometimes we just, as parents, they should try and tell them that, you know, especially when they're children, that no secrets from the parents. So, you know, they are like their sanctuary, so they should come to them, because sometimes then they keep secrets from the parents. And that kind of, you know.
Yeah, so this is from first. You should be have such open conversation in a way.
Nice relationship.
Yeah, and good relationship, and be polite so that they can understand that only the parents can, you know, like be given all their secrets
yeah,
to.
Yeah, very true.
You have to talk to them openly so that they can even tell, you know, everything to the parents, so that because they know the parents would only lovingly guide them.
Very true.
Nobody else would do that.
Yeah. So stay tuned, we're just going to take a short break.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said, a righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. We've been discussing about one of the very important characteristics that we want to instill in children so that they can grow up as, you know, very successful and a broad-minded youth, one of which was trustworthiness. And one of the very important ways you said is to teach them how to keep secrets. And
yeah.
based on that, we have been having a nice discussion. So if you'd like to add anything else.
Yeah. The third point I would like to discuss about how to bring up a good teenager with Islamic morals and everything should be that he should be grateful of his parents.
Mm.
The parent here has to be, you know, like in such a way dealing with the child that the child feels the parent's love.
True.
Feels the parents' care, and feels that the parents want their best for him. So all in all, the parents should be polite, the parents should be loving, the parents should always reassure the child that they love him. That's very important, to reassure, to make the child feel that he's not alone.
True.
Never to leave him, you know, talking and you're not listening. All these things are ways to reassure that if you're listening to them attentively, caring for them, looking after them when they're sick, all these things make a teenager will realize that it's only the parents who can really take care of him
yeah,
in the long run.
Cares for him
so,
most.
Instill this gratefulness in them, that when they grow up, they realize these things and then they are grateful to their parents. They don't neglect them or they don't ignore them. They shouldn't be a time when they feel ashamed of them near their friends. Whatever the parents are, however they are, but they should be so proud of their parents.
Very
Even
true.
If the parents are, for example, so, you know, like bedridden or they're in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
But they should be so happy to show their parents around. And if they have that felt that love between the parents and the child, then automatically they will be proud of their parents.
Yeah, true.
So this is very important, because this is the best way to get felicity in this world and the hereafter for the child, the teenagers. If they want that goodness of this world and the hereafter and that reward from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then they should ensure that they are grateful for their parents and whatever they've done. In fact, the parents, if they are not, they have not lived up to that standard, the teenagers also, if they are listening to what I'm speaking, they should even try to be so polite to their parents. They should try to be so grateful to the parents, because it can't be said that they didn't do anything for them. They raised them, they looked after them, and they even carried them all those 9 months, which was weakness after weakness, but like the mother, for example.
Yeah.
So she's given so many rights and heaven lies under her feet. And even if she's wrong, you should be, you know, like calm before her. So teenagers should realize this thing. And unfortunately, in this day and age, it's not so much practiced. But I say that if the child is raised in such a loving manner, then the teenager will reciprocate that same behavior.
Very true. Asant, and inshallah that we are such children and to our parents as well, however old or young we are, inshallah. Thank you very much for your very valuable time, Sister Salma, and we hope to see you in the next episode. Dear listeners, you have just listened to IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing under the program Islamic Upbringing. And if you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI, which is Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can email us on englishradio@irib.ir. God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, thanking Allah the Almighty in the holy month of Ramadan as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Ramadan Kareem, Ramadan Mubarak. What a beautiful month to be living in the holy month of Ramadan. Yes, it's difficult. Yes, it has trials and hardships, but a beautiful month indeed. And what blessings are in this holy month of Ramadan. Many of us, probably all of us, can never fully fathom the great blessings that are within this month. Of course, we are being purified second by second by the grace and the will of the Almighty Allah. So we're talking about shukr, we're talking about thanking Allah, we're talking about being grateful to Allah, we are talking about appreciating the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, you know, being grateful to Allah is a very fundamental thing, but despite being a very fundamental thing, many times we really don't pay too much attention to it. And matter of fact, the more we become engrossed in materialism and in this world and, you know, in this rat race, in this hamster wheel that we have become stuck in, we tend to forget not only the afterlife, but we tend to forget simple things such as asking for forgiveness for our errors and our mistakes, and likewise thanking Allah for all the blessings that we have in our lives. I mean, truly, do we ever sit down and think about all the things and all the blessings that Allah has given us, has provided us, has endowed us with? Most probably we don't think twice about that. We don't think twice about the food that Allah has provided us during the suhoor, the pre-dawn fasting meal, right, that we have before we start our fasting. Or, for example, an iftar,
You know, after our fasting, when we break our fast, do we ever thank Allah for the food that He has provided? And the list goes on and on to the various blessings that we have that we don't bother to thank Allah for.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A2Z on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, holy month of Ramadan, and we are talking about thanking Allah. Now, one way that you can thank Allah is by saying shukran lillah, you know, thanks be to Allah. Or you can say alhamdulillah, praise be to Allah. Or even in your own language, you can say, oh Allah, I thank you for all the countless and numerous bounties and blessings that you have given me, right? These are different verbal forms in which we can thank the Almighty Allah. But of course, you know, the deeper it comes from our heart and the more sincere this gratefulness and this appreciation to the Almighty Allah is, the more impact it has on ourselves. And our relationship with the Almighty Allah. Of course, that is another part of our Islamic lifestyle. And in the holy month of Ramadan, this is something that is easier to do, and that is to establish a connection and a relationship with the Almighty Allah. And what better way than to praise Allah? What better way than to be grateful to Allah, to appreciate the things that Allah has given you? So since we're running out of time on the program, one last point is that we should actively think about the things that Allah has given us to, you know, the extent possible. Because when you start to count the things that Allah has given you, you will very quickly realize that there are so many things that you really won't be able to count all of them. Things as simple as, you know, having the health to be able to breathe or eat, or the blessing of family, or the blessing of the holy month of Ramadan, or the blessing of being a Muslim. When you start counting them, you will realize that there are many countless blessings. And you thank Allah for each one of these blessings. And every time you can bring up different blessings, you know, and you can speak with Allah, saying to Him that you have given me a certain bounty and a certain blessing, and I appreciate that, and I thank you for that, and you are so compassionate and merciful and kind and generous that you have provided these things without wanting anything in return. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A2Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. So alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around.
In the limelight.
As expected, the Gaza ceasefire resolution has got the world abuzz, while the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has welcomed it by thanking the UN Security Council. The Zionist regime is deeply unhappy and distressed. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote in its statement, Hamas has called for a permanent ceasefire that leads to the withdrawal of all Zionist forces from the Gaza Strip and the return of the displaced to the homes from which they left. To demonstrate its commitment to comply with the resolution, Hamas said it is willing to engage in an immediate prisoner exchange process that leads to the release of prisoners on both sides. In addition, Hamas has called on the UN Security Council to pressure the occupation to adhere to the ceasefire and stop the war of genocide and ethnic cleansing against our people. On the other hand, the war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu is fuming. His anger is reflective of the deep-seated, vengeful characteristic of the racist Zionist ideology, responsible for the mass slaughter of Palestinians in what has outraged the world since October 7th last year. The death toll in the besieged Gaza Strip now tops 32,475% of them children and women, according to the Gaza Media Office. At least 7,000 others are still trapped under the rubble. As the minutes were ticking at the UN Security Council, with member states seeing huddling in groups before the session commenced, Netanyahu issued an ultimatum to US President Joe Biden. If you fail to veto it, I will cancel the trip of my envoys to you. His threat failed this Mali. The Biden administration, which has militarily and financially supported the Israeli regime genocidal war on Gaza in the past 6 months, abstained from voting. Importantly, the U.S. vetoed Gaza ceasefire resolutions on three occasions in 3 months. By not exercising its veto power this time, the resolution sailed through with the support of all 14 states. The much-awaited resolution demands an immediate ceasefire for the holy month of Ramadan. It also calls for an immediate release of hostages without conditioning it. In other words, the resolution does not insist that for the ceasefire to kick in, Israeli regime captives have to be released as prior condition by the Gaza-based Hamas resistance group. Pertinently, the Security Council did not entertain the request submitted by the Russian representative who called for a permanent ceasefire after the holy month of Ramadan. Also, the draft did not accept the demand of the Israeli regime, the US and the UK to condemn the Hamas resistance group, which irked the Zionist regime and its Western backers, in contextualizing the legal obligations of member states to abide by UNSC resolutions. It's important to distinguish Hamas as a non-state resistance movement engaged in a freedom struggle that is not a party to the UN Charter, whereas the apartheid regime of Israel is. It means that the resolution is primarily directed at the Zionist entity by calling on it as a party to the UN Charter to comply with the ceasefire demand. Also, although the enforcement mechanism isn't clearly defined, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, in his remarks recently, said the much-awaited resolution must be implemented and that failure would be unforgivable. Hence, Hamas is perfectly correct to insist that the UNSC pressures the occupying regime to adhere to the ceasefire resolution and stop the war of genocide and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. At the same time, while Netanyahu has been throwing tantrums, his military affairs minister, Yoav Gallant, is currently stationed in Washington meeting U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. The tension and policy differences between Netanyahu and Gallant have become messy and publicly known, even though the regime has been trying to cover it up to avoid further embarrassment. A crisis between the two warlords, as well as huge cracks in the US-Israel alliance, is a welcome development for Palestine resistance movements, particularly Hamas, notwithstanding the fact that the Biden administration remains fully committed to Netanyahu's criminal goals in Gaza. In his response, on behalf of the Palestinian National Initiative, PNI, Secretary General Mustafa Barghouti was pretty forthright. The UN Security Council resolution for an immediate ceasefire is binding, and it dealt a blow to Netanyahu and his extremist and aggressive government, and sanctions must be imposed on it if it refuses to implement it, he stated. Adding, although the decision was unbalanced with regard to the prisoners because it did not explicitly refer to the need to release thousands of Palestinian prisoners, it stressed the necessity of removing all Israeli obstacles to the arrival of humanitarian aid to all areas of the Gaza Strip, which means the freedom for all displaced persons to return to their homes and areas where they abandoned it. Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, on his visit to Tehran recently a day after the resolution was adopted, said it was delayed and riddled with shortcomings, but still underscores the isolation of the Zionist regime. He also thanked the Islamic Republic of Iran for its steadfast support for the Palestinian cause and nation.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim,
I am a Muslim,
Islamati,
Islamati.
Allah my Lord,
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran,
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet,
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon,
praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station, Choo Choo Kachoo. It's Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider.
And I am Asma.
How are you doing, Sister Asma?
Well, it's fine.
How's the month of Ramadan going for you?
It's perfect. Actually, it's one of the months that I love so much. Like, I feel the world is different from the world I was living in the previous months.
MashaAllah, that's really
so
good.
I think it's another worldly sort of a world when it's Ramadan.
So what kind of food do you guys have? Because, like, you come from an Iranian background. Like, mm-hmm. I've had Iranian iftar, and it's like cheese and bread and cucumbers. Yeah. And, like, it's really light. It's really nice sometimes.
So we started with warm water and date, of course. So we would have some soup, and then we would just give a rest to our stomach. And maybe after that, we go for cheese and bread. And then it's just something personal. You can pick whatever you like. Mm-hmm. Like, the main dish, we would have it at Sahar. Like, at dawn, we would go for the main dish. So it's just like this.
Okay. Yeah, with the opposite, because I come from an Indo-background, right? Mm-hmm. And they just, sister, like, the foods that we have are just irresistible. They're so good. They're just amazing. Yeah. Have you ever had a dhambara?
What is it?
I can't describe it. It's. I need to tell my wife, can you please make it today? I'm going to offer.
So what does it have in itself?
It's like, it's yogurt-y. And there's these...
Is it a fried?
Yeah, it's like a deep fried thing. It's like a ball made out of chickpeas, I think. Chickpea flour.
Yeah, I guess I know that.
What's the name? Repeat that. The name of that food.
Dahi bara.
There was another food. I guess it was Pakistani food.
Samosa.
No. It has got potato in it, again, it has got the kind of flour in it. I don't remember what kind of flour it had in it. Pakora? But still, it was something.
Yeah. I mean, every year we kind of lecture people and we say, listen, you're not supposed to spend your Ramadan like this. You know, going to sleep really late, mm-hmm. staying up all night eating snacks, and then waking up really late, and then just kind of just waiting until iftar time, and then at iftar time you just gorge yourself on food. It's supposed to be something else. But this year, I'm just thinking, oh, do you know what? Everybody just relax. We're going through a tough time, you know? Just take it easy.
Yeah. You know? I guess everybody has to go.
Astaghfirullah, but seriously, how much blessings do you really want? How much? Like, even your sleeping is an act of ibadah in the month of Ramadan, mm-hmm. right? But it's, look at the mercy of Allah. You don't, like, you just fast. That's all you do. Yeah. And he just showers you with constant blessings. Mm-hmm. There's a hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. He says that, look, if one is not forgiven in the month of Ramadan, which month is he actually going to be forgiven in?
The holy month of Ramadan is not just about food and sleeping and much of fasting. It's not just about that.
It's about learning.
Yeah, of course. And we have this long and huge heritage that has been passed down to us.
Yeah.
Ever since we were children, we heard a lot of stories in these months because, you know, there is a big link and tie between the holy month of Ramadan and Imam Ali alayhi salam, because just in the middle, we get to come closer to him because those days are just devoted to him. Mm-hmm. So this holy month has always been a matter of thinking more about ourselves and at the same time trying to know more about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yeah.
So the things I remember, I first learned about Imam Ali alayhi salam as a time when I was so young. I was a child.
Mm.
So it is going to be related to one of his quotes. Like, I remember, you know, that in this month, all the lectures on TV, all the lectures that you, when you go to shrine, you would hear them, are related to stuff that would teach you how to be a much better person and how to learn from Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, patience and whatever, all the good virtuous stuff that you have to learn from them. The quote I heard was about this fact that whatever you love for yourself, you must love it for the other people as well.
Hmm.
So it was just like a moment of manifestation. Like, if every single person in this world, actually this quote is by Imam Ali alayhi salam. Mm-hmm. So if anybody would start thinking like this, like they would wish whatever goodness they wish for themselves for other people as well, then the world would turn into a heaven because nobody would wish themselves harm. So they would never wish any harmful story to happen to other people.
Mm-hmm.
So this was one thing that I remember I learned from him. We can keep it in here, go for a break. You can think more and then we could get into some more of details.
Welcome back. We've been discussing about how we remember being taught about Imam Ali alayhi salam in our youth and all the things that we learned about him when we were younger. Yeah. I mean, I learned all the heroic things, right? He used to fight the enemies and that was all really cool and heroic and stuff, but
and
I don't
you
know.
Learned those stuff when you were a child?
Yes, I was born and raised in the UK, right?
Yeah.
So in South London,
mm-hmm.
and the community there, at that time, there was no English speakers, really. It was all Urdu lectures.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And just the way that it was discussed was just very cultural heavy, dependent on certain symbols, which we've created. But the point is that it was very focused on those things rather than on the actual message of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the message of Rasulullah, the message of Islam in general. And when I listened to those English lecturers, this was like way back in the day, we had like one or two maximum English lecturers. Mm-hmm. We never even... And they actually spoke about the message in a way that was relatable for me. But before then, it wasn't, you know.
So before that, it was only stories that were exaggerated to your own perspective. Yeah. And then after that, you got deeper into the personality and the messages of the Prophet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's the real meaning behind this message? What what are we actually saying here? Just recently, actually, I've fallen in love with Imam Ali all over again because he's just amazing. How can you not love Imam Ali alayhi salam?
Mm-hmm.
He's everything that he did. When he fought on the battlefield, it was as if he was only a full-time soldier. He was a warrior, and that is all that he was.
Yeah.
When he wrote, it was you'd think that you know he's just a full-time scholar. This is all that he does. When he spoke, you'd think that he is a perfect orator. That is what he is. When he was at home with his family, with his wife, his kids, he was so loving, caring, you know, just like the Holy Prophet, he would be friendly with them. You'd think that this is just a dedicated father.
Yeah, that's very true. These are just about his personalities. And if we put our childhood aside, because whatever we learned about him in our childhood maybe was so trivial compared to who he truly is and what he has truly passed down to us.
If we cannot overlook the fact that he is human. That is what makes him so special.
Yeah. The thing about them which makes them so extraordinary is the fact that they were just like us.
Exactly, exactly. But that is omitted. That's not talked about. And that makes them these superhuman beings and entities which you just can't understand, you can't identify with, and nor does it become a role model for you, because how can that be a role model for you when it's not even human?
Yeah.
You know, but that's what they've done with personalities, especially like personalities with Imam Ali. Like, they've almost deified them.
There's a lot to say about that.
By the way, I'm not talking about the whole community here. I'm talking about my particular community, and even then...
Yes, your personal experience.
Yeah, loud. It's not the same experience that everybody has.
Yes.
I'm just saying that's what I was...
Yeah, that's very true. There was another thing that touched me, really. Just imagine if you are going to be hit by someone, and then... when it comes to revenge, you would wish them death as many times as you could kill them. But then what happens in Imam Ali's case is that he would tell his son, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, to just kill him with one hit of that sword.
Mm.
Like, he is so just, even with the one who has done him this horrible act of killing. So him being so just to everyone and every occasion that happened in his era is another stuff that really attracts my attention about his personality.
Yeah, justice is one of the most amazing, extraordinary traits of Imam Ali.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Some people with a Christian background, for example, if you're raised in a Christian society, you should be cautious that you are going to be influenced by Christian thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good thing at all. You should be as Islamic as possible. Ibn Muljim had struck him with a sword, and because of this, you know, Imam Ali, the Khalifa of the time, is going to be... you know, he's going to be martyred. Why didn't he just forgive him completely? And our reply to that would be that would not be justice. Justice is more important than your perceived notion of mercy. And sometimes that perceived notion of mercy is actually a huge injustice, because it allows criminals and tyrants to still exist in society, and they go on spreading all sorts of chaos.
Exactly.
There were so many people at that time who absolutely hated Imam Ali. Why? instead of recognizing that, hold on a second, these people who were killed by Imam Ali, they deserve to be killed, and they were awful people, and they would have been tyrannical and murderous mm-hmm. and mischievous. Instead of recognizing that, they actually just harbored enmity towards Imam Ali, while having accepted the outer appearance of Islam. And of course, the Holy Prophet said himself, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, that, what is it? A believer can never hate Imam Ali, and a hypocrite can never love him. Did you get that?
Yeah.
Right?
That makes everything
Allah
pretty clear.
Made Imam Ali the criteria. Imagine a person striving so much and reaching such a spiritual height that they actually become the criteria between who is a believer and who is a munafiq, a mm-hmm. hypocrite. In another hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam said this. He said, last one, then we'll end inshallah because we're out of time, but this is a really good one to end on. He said, if I were to strike a believer on the nose with my sword, he would still never hate me. And if I were to give a mountain of gold to the munafiq, to the hypocrite, he would still never love me.
Yeah.
And these are points for us to contemplate on. We hope that you exactly. enjoyed the show, inshallah, and benefited from it. It's been an honor and a pleasure for me.
Of course, same in here. And yes, just to give the last point, I would say that all the love that we have toward this personality is a link that comes from our childhood memories, the things that we've heard about him. But as you get older and you grow much more mature, you'd come to read his own words in the book of Nahjul Balagha, and then you would learn more about him. You would have some more of causes to love him more and more. So it's a good idea to go through this book in the holy month of Ramadan, because it's going to give you a chance to see things in a different way.
Mm. Thank you for that reminder, sister. And we'll see you guys later, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Allah, Allah. Allah, Allah. Allah, Allah, Allah.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
مجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this episode, we want to present to you an extract from the speech of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about Imam Ali alayhi salam. In the face of oppression, oppressors, deviation from the path of God, transgression and greed, the commander of the faithful will stand up against these matters with complete steadfastness and power. His resistance against those conditions is unprecedented to this very day. He also behaved in a completely sensitive and delicate manner when it came to divine remembrance and dhikr. He behaved similarly towards the oppressed, underprivileged, and vulnerable classes of the society. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the most powerful man, yet he was a ruler who was wronged the most in the history. Three apparently contradictory features coexist in the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. Imam Ali alayhi salam is a strong, powerful, and a sovereign man. At the same time, he was wronged. Moreover, and at the same time, he is and he was ultimately victorious during various events. If we want to acquire an accurate understanding of the power and strength of the commander of the faithful, we should look to the vast dominions of his government.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The large territory, which was under the management of the commander of the faithful, extended as far as present-day Afghanistan to the Mediterranean Sea and to Egypt. This vast territory was governed by the commander of the faithful, and he did so with complete power and solidity. His iron will, his courage, his military might as an author, his eloquent tongue, and his appealing logic, the commander of the faithful words and addresses, full of enthusiasm and full of wisdom, have provided instructive lessons for all humans to live by to this day, and these are all signs of his strengths. His robust physique, intellect, determination, management, and style of rhetoric were all indications of a strong and powerful individual. At the same time, this strong man was wrong. Signs of oppression against him could be witnessed in the behavior of his enemies and the envious. They could be witnessed in the unfair accusations that were leveled against him by the agents of his enemies during his lifetime and in the materialistic behavior of some of his companions. A number of his companions and comrades broke away from him because they pursued their materialistic desires.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
It was the 11th time the British capital had played host to another national demonstration against the US-led Israeli genocide of Palestinians inside Gaza. Coincidentally, this march was taking place on an auspicious day for Palestinians. March 30th is commemorated as Land Day to mark the 1976 Israeli killing of six Palestinians and the wounding of scores more who had gathered to show their affinity for a land that has literally witnessed the constant shedding of Palestinian blood. In an act of solidarity with Palestine, central London showed it would not be letting up on the pressure. Flash forward to this most recent attempt to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its people, and it's clear the UK is being blasted for its complicity in allowing a ceasefire motion to go unacknowledged by Tel Aviv. A comparatively small counter-demo by pro-Israel supporters was peacefully drowned out by pro-Palestinians. The protesters taking part in the demo had a variety of reasons why their presence on the marches mattered.
We just want to bring this conflict into the consciousness of everyone, so everyone understands what's going on here. You know, children being slaughtered, you know, women being slaughtered, the schools and hospitals just completely destroyed. You know, it's just inhumane. It's just beyond imagination.
We have to stop this. We have to. Don't you? No one can be blind to what's happening. It has to stop. It has to stop. Showing ourselves like this, demonstrating how horrified and outraged we are, and then boycott Israel.
Demonstrators have pledged to keep turning out in the streets to protest against the genocide in Gaza until there's a cessation of violence and justice for Palestinians. Amina Taylor, London.
In Paris and across France, major rallies were held on Palestinian Land Day, which recalls the events of March 30, 1976, when Israelis killed six unarmed Palestinians and injured 100 others during protests against Israel's confiscation of Palestinian land. The United Nations Security Council finally passed a resolution for a ceasefire in Gaza, but Israel continues to trample on the most basic human rights. Its main arms dealers and political bodyguards, the United States and Germany, have taken no steps to prevent Tel Aviv from murdering even more innocents. The casualty count in Gaza is now well over 100,000, with more than 32,000 Palestinians killed and 75,000 people injured in less than 6 months. Israel continues to do what it once virulently denied ever doing, illegally bombing hospitals, and even arresting scores of doctors and patients in just the last week. Despite spreading famine, Israel has told the United Nations it will not allow any food convoys into northern Gaza, which the UN Secretary General described as a moral outrage. An investigative report just revealed that a French arms company sent nearly a ton of machine gun parts to Israel in October, which were likely used against civilians in Gaza. That contradicts the longtime stance of Paris that the arms it exports to Israel are purely defensive. Christians in Gaza are celebrating their holy Easter weekend amid the invasion, carpet bombing, and famine. Hundreds of historical sites, including many churches, have been destroyed by Israelis in what's been deemed a cultural genocide. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
On the third Friday of Ramadan, tens of thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of Sana'a and several other cities, renewing their unwavering support for Palestinians. Some held banners that read, "We are entering the 10th year and the Palestinian cause remains our priority."
We're entering the 10th year of our resistance against an all-out war on the Yemeni people. We are here today to show our continued support for the Palestinians in Gaza and across the occupied territories. When the countries that possess enormous military capabilities failed to support the Palestinians in Gaza and even conspired with the Israeli regime against them, the war-stricken Yemenis came out to support their oppressed brothers. They left the world in awe with a united front and a soaring popularity in the region.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to retaliate against the US and the UK airstrikes on the Yemeni cities. They also pledged to escalate their naval operations as long as the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians and the aggression against Yemen continue. Yemenis also slammed the United Nations Security Council for its failure to put an end to the Israeli atrocities in Palestine, despite its recent ceasefire resolution.
We consider the Security Council complicit in the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The United States manipulates the Security Council and the United Nations based on its interests. That is why the U.S. used its veto power three times to prevent a ceasefire in Gaza. But besides that, the Security Council resolutions are ineffective in ending the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza.
The problem is not with the Security Council or the United Nations, but with the United States, which has the power to control and manipulate these international organizations. There are many binding decisions that have not been implemented because Washington uses its power against the weak and oppressed people of the world. It is necessary to